listening to the EVs for Everyone podcast. My name is Elena Ciccatelli, an award-winning automotive executive, and I'm so excited to introduce you to some of the most dynamic thought leaders the EV economy has to offer. Listen in on honest conversations I have with the leading electric vehicle experts and uncover critical insights that will help you jump ahead and stay there. The electrification race is officially on, and these conversations have never been more important. So whether you're an automotive executive or just an EV enthusiast, this is the podcast for you. Let's get started. We are at the tail end of the Auto Intel Summit. I think we closed the place down, right? Because today was like EV Day, right? I think.
It was, yeah, EV Thursday.
It was EV Thursday. So we just came off doing like two awesome panels, right? So Scott Case, co-founder and CEO of Recurrent, and we've got Dan Sadie, director of sales at Norm Reeves Car Group.
For a couple more weeks, and then I'll be moving back into the stores.
We just did a panel, which was all about EV leasing boom. Scott did the great EV debate with Steve Greenfield, where
I crushed him this time. It was like sick burn after sick burn.
I know. So Scott had like this whole list of just burns. What I don't know if you remember any of them. I think one was about like your argument is so old-fashioned that it has like steam-powered or something.
I went to ChatGPT and typed in, I'm debating someone about EV adoption, and I need five sick burns to use in the debate, and it was hilarious.
And then
instant best use of AI I've ever had.
I think that's amazing. So I think we need to do that for more panels. Just type it in the ChatGPT. When it comes to battery health, what are some of the considerations that you're looking at if a vehicle is coming in? Say for example, I know we talked about the VW ID4. You said you have like amazing deals now happening on the VW ID4. So say, for example, that comes across your desk. What are the considerations that you're taking a look at before you're, off and running with a new customer?
I mean, to be honest, a lot of those cars are still under manufacturer warranty. So,
yeah.
Like the battery health, readings and things of that nature are not really anything that's overly important at this point for us.
Mm.
Some of the cars have had some issues with batteries and had some recalls and or battery replacements. So that's something that we have to be conscious of. The consumer is still very sensitive to the technology.
Yeah.
So you hear a lot of comments like, hey, I just want to make sure I'm covered. I'm worried about the battery.
Right.
Of course. So that's something that we have to take into consideration and be able to answer to. But I think the tech guys get really, really excited about, battery health and battery health readings, and rightfully so, because at some point that's going to really matter.
Yeah.
But for us from the retail side, I don't think it's quite as big of a deal right now as it may be in the future when these cars no longer have warranty on them.
Right, exactly. And then so from where you sit, Scott, I know you work on this like day in and day out. What are you kind of seeing in the world of not only just battery health, but just getting the right message out about these off-lease vehicles?
First of all, my daily driver is an ID4, and it's 3 years old now. It's basically right from the beginning. I was on the wait list right at the beginning, and battery's fine in those cars. I am curious, though, if you get people, nerds mostly, that come in and my car loses range in the winter, right? Did people come in December and they're like, what's going on with this? I want it checked out, is that a service burden for you guys?
Maybe not in Southern California.
I can't, exactly. Right. We have optimal weather for battery health. I drive an ID4 also. Yeah. I drive it 120 miles a day. I crank the AC and turn on the seat warmers when I do whatever. I drive it like a normal car, and I can't say that I've had any concern with it. So I really can't. I think if you're in a colder climate, that might be an issue. But in Southern California, I don't really hear that concern.
There's the range anxiety question. There's the charger anxiety question. And I know we touched on this a little bit in our panel, just on the education component of all of this, EV puzzle. Common questions that you're facing from customers when it comes to the ABCs of this is what this battery is capable of doing. Like,
I'm going to go back to my iPhone analogy.
Yes.
I mean, because if you go and buy an iPhone, they're like, do you want the 128 or the 250 right. or the 2? Well, I would say that a EV battery is very similar to that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think consumers are so much concerned with the kilowatt hour of battery, but really what they want to know is, what does that represent in actual real world range?
Yes.
How long is it going to take me to charge that battery realistically right. if I'm doing public chargers? And you know, if you're sharing a charger with somebody, how that affects the charging time. And I think those are really the concerns that most consumers have, is, you know, how is this going to affect my day-to-day life and my time and you know, the convenience of me owning this car and operating this car and charging it. Those are really the most important things to cover.
Going to the iPhone analogy, or in a different way though, is that I think a lot of people, especially when they're buying used, do think about, they're like, well, I've owned an iPhone, I've actually probably owned several iPhones right. over my time, and I have experienced over the course of a year or two or 3 years, like, the battery wears down and I can't talk all day anymore. Like, I have to charge in the middle of the day. And so I think they have that mental model when they're coming in to buy a used EV. And yet the cars aren't wearing out in that amount of time. And so it's like, I think it's good from a, what do I get out of this, you know? But it's maybe not as good from a, like, putting that fear of, yeah, actually it's going to wear down the same amount that the iPhone does,
right.
which is not true. Everybody grew up, like, learning how to take care of a combustion engine car from their parents and grandparents, and you couldn't learn that from your parents and grandparents with an EV. And so it's so, like, what we're doing is forming those mental models for owners.
What's really interesting about it, too, is people aren't used to not maintaining their car.
Right.
You know, and you take an EV in for a 10K service, and it's literally, they, like, look the car over and put wiper blades and a filter in it.
I was going to say, like, what is that experience like? Like, that it's wiper blades
it's
and a filter?
It's literally like, hey, what did you guys do to the car? What was the multi-point inspection? Oh, we checked the wipers out, and we replaced the cabin filter. You know, the wheels are staggered. You can't even rotate the tires
totally.
On these cars. You
know,
so,
like,
I mean, there's no maintenance, you know, so.
Like, I changed the radio station for you. Like, so.
There's a software update, maybe.
Right.
I did get my software update, finally,
What happened with that? I remember we were chatting about that last time. It was a hot minute.
It just didn't get updated for a while, but then now it has, like, actually now my ID4 can finally join Recurrent. It was like years, and I'm like the CEO of this company, and I can't sign up my own car. But once the new software update got to my car, then I could finally sign it up.
Yeah,
but it's cool. I see the touchscreen is snappier, and they show the battery percentage in addition to the range remaining right in the front, which was something that I was really excited about.
All right, really cool.
Oh,
yeah.
And sorry, yes. This is turning into a Volkswagen podcast.
But I'm gonna go back to the charging, because that's, you know, if you don't have level 2 charging at home, it's a different ownership experience.
Right.
I can speak from experience. I drive 120 miles a day. I get home, I plug in my phone, I plug in my car, I go to sleep, I wake up, and I'm ready to go the next day.
Right.
Well, that's not the case for a lot of people, especially in Southern California. A lot of people live in apartments or condominiums, and they can't wire into their garage or wherever. And the charging networks, quite frankly, are just not reliable enough with Electrify America and Blue Oval and some of the other non-Tesla charging stations. So that's a big factor with any EV owner, but, you know, including a used car buyer. That's something that they have to really take into consideration and plan for a little bit.
I'm curious if the used EV buyer, like, knows enough to distinguish between Electrify America and EVgo and ChargePoint and Tesla, you know, like, how much do they know, you know? And do you think that their impressions are different from the reality?
I think it's a mixed bag, because you get an educated EV customer that comes in and buys that car sometimes. They know all about the car. Yeah. They know where they're going to charge it. They know everything about it.
Yeah.
And then you have the person that is maybe buying that car because it's affordable for them. Because they do get a tax credit.
Yeah, so we talked about the tax credit.
You know, like, California had some government programs that help lower income people that but they required you to buy either a plug-in or an electric car.
Yeah.
So these people are buying this car. It's out of necessity.
Right.
Right. So for people like that, they need some help. They need help planning, like, how they're going to operate this car every day. Mm. They don't have charging at home, and they need a little bit of education around that. And so, so it's a mixed bag of
yeah,
all different kinds of people.
And I know there's a bunch of tech companies now trying to figure out that condominium, duplex, apartment, charging cluster, as it were. So hopefully in the next couple years or so, people that aren't in a single family home and, have to maybe share a charging solution, hopefully that gets better. Right. So.
Okay. So I have a question for Dan. So how is sourcing supply of used EVs different for you from sourcing supply for combustion engine cars? Whether it's channel or inspections or pricing or appraisals or whatever it is. What's different?
There really is no difference in the sense that we try to meet the demands of the customer. So if there's certain EVs that we're selling and the customers want, we're going to go source those cars. And the same thing with internal combustions or trucks and SUVs, whatever the case may be. The market's going to dictate the decisions we make. So right now, obviously, the $25,000 price point and finding a car that you can acquire and meet that price point is a big deal. Because those are the cars that people want because they're affordable and, there's some incentive behind them. And, the average price of a used car in the market right now is just about $24,000.
Yeah.
So the idea that you can buy a really nice, high-tech, fully optioned electric car for a very similar price is very appealing to a lot of people. So I think that's going to continue as these leases start to mature and come back into the market. I don't think we're going to see these values of used EVs tank entirely, because there's going to be enough demand in the market and the prices are going to be favorable for most consumers that I think these cars will sell.
Yeah.
It seems like there's because of the $4,000 cash back, there's kind of a floor price for the value of a used EV. They'll depreciate because, there's new tech and, they get wear and tear or whatever. But then I don't think that a lot of them depreciate much past 20,000, sort of because there's that sweet spot around, 20 to 22,000, you buy it and price it just under 25 for the resale.
And it depends on what it is. If you look back at some
the Leaf is going to be
the Fiat 500 EV and the Leaf and some of those necessary EVs that some of the manufacturers develop, those don't have a lot of demand in the market because they don't have the range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No.
But these modern EVs that have over 200 miles in range and have really nice interiors and creature comforts, those are nice cars and people are going to want those cars.
I think it's going to be interesting to see if the depreciation for modern EVs basically is pretty quick down to 22 and then holds there for a long time, which is way different. There's no similar sort of hidden floor ceiling for an ICE car.
Right. Yeah. And, I think that aside from the tax credit, if you're selling that car around the market average, like I said, 50% of our customers don't know about this federal tax credit.
Right.
You know, 50 do and 50 don't.
So great. That's so,
so
crazy.
I mean, if you have a car, a nice car that a customer wants and it's favorably priced, tax credit or no tax credit, I mean, people are going to buy the car.
Yeah. I know, because the payment makes sense, right? It makes total sense. And I would love for you to reiterate the answer to the question I asked on your panel about the sales folks, the salespeople, because I've heard this argument so many times from different dealers across the country where they were saying, well, we don't really want to sell EVs because my people don't make that much money on them. The margin is real slim. What was the answer that you gave to your specific example?
If a customer comes in and wants to buy an EV, we are going to sell them an EV. Regardless of what that deal looks like, we're going to serve the customer's needs. EVs are not the only segment of inventory that we're drastically discounting and that have high day supplies. I mean, you can go, I'll give you an example, Stellantis probably has the highest day supply in the market right now. and you can go buy a Jeep Gladiator for 15% off MSRP.
Right.
You think that's a favorable deal for the dealership and the sales guy? No, but they have to sell the cars.
Right.
I mean, the alternative to that is you let them rot on your lot and you pay flooring expense, and there's an expense to holding that car. So
correct, yes.
Dealers need to move these cars, and we're going to find ways to incentivize our sales team and incentivize our customers to sell these cars. And that's just the reality of it. And that's been the car business forever. There's always been unfavorable models that have collected on lots and that we've had to sell at, you know, heavily discounted prices. And that's just the business. We've hit a home run with these cars for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
We absolutely crushed it with some of these EVs.
Yeah.
And so this past year, you know, we produced a lot of them. The demand slowed down and, you know, we had to take a little bit of a hit on them and move on. But that doesn't mean that there's not going to be any demand in the market and that nobody's going to want these cars anymore. There's still people who want these cars. We're still going to service the needs of the customer.
So, okay, I have a follow-up question here. What percent of your sales folks drive an EV themselves? And have you sort of noticed that that makes them more likely to be able to be an effective educator and seller?
100%. I would say...
Wait, 100%?
No, not 100%.
Okay, gotcha.
No, I think 100% that yes.
Yeah. I asked two percentage questions.
Yeah. I'll start with the first part of
the
question. I'd probably say... It depends on the franchise. Like Honda's just barely launching their first EV with the Prologue. So that's not really, you know, a good example there. But I think between like our Hyundai and Genesis brands and our Volkswagen brands, you know, probably 20 or 30% of our employees drive them.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit higher, you know, with some brands. And I think it's absolutely important. You know, I mean, think about it. If you're driving a car every day and getting to know every nook and cranny about it, and you're, you know, offering that as part of your, you know, your inventory in your dealership, and you have a really good understanding of it, just think about how well educated you can make that customer when you go to sell that car. And so it's very important.
I talked to someone at Carolina Auto Auction yesterday who has had now, he started driving a Tesla a year ago, and now he's like, he knows it all. And so now, like, as that auction gets more EVs coming in, he's like, he's the guy, you know, he knows all what's up, and, you know, and it just, like, it's got to be the same thing for in retail.
EV champion person, it's like, they know how to open the door in the Tesla. They know how to, like, make sure that what is it, the tight turning radius on the ID4 that was, like, super good.
What was that?
My favorite part of the car.
It's the best turning radius.
With a hairpin turn.
Like. Oh my God, it's incredible. Yeah.
It is the best turning radius of any car I've ever
driven. I U-turn in all kinds of illegal places because of that car. It's great.
It's butts and seats, getting people to experience it in the real world. I think that is certainly a theme just in these past, like, even 10 episodes that I've done. This was amazing to be able to just kind of download some of the information that we were sharing during the conference, and now the listeners have the benefit of vicariously living through us of this conference. So Scott Case Recurrent, thank you for being here. Dan Sadie, thank you for being here. Car Group,
thanks for having me.
This is amazing. Thank you guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the EVs for Everyone podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star review with a comment. We read every single comment, so thank you in advance. If you have an idea for an upcoming episode, or you would like to be a guest on the show, go to evs4everyone.com/contact. That's evs4everyone.com/contact. Until next time, keep charging forward. Word.